A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's got three questions for us this week, and they all orbit around the same thing. Which long-haul aircraft really earns its keep? He wants to know which of the A330, A330, 777, or 787 clocks the most daily miles on long-haul routes. He's also asking whether any airline not flying Boeing or Airbus has ever held major long-haul market share. Concorde aside. And finally, which aircraft is actually trending right now among operators in this segment? It's a utilization question, a history question, and a futures question, all wrapped together.
And they connect more than they first appear. Because the utilization answer, which plane spends the most hours in the air per day, that's the engine that drives airline profitability. An aircraft sitting on the ground is just a very expensive parking lot ornament.
The least fuel-efficient parking lot ornament in human history.
Right. So we're going to dig into the numbers on all four of Daniel's aircraft, then tackle that history question, which has a Soviet chapter most people don't know about, and then look at what the order books are saying about where this is all heading.
Let's define the terms first. What counts as long haul here?
For this conversation, we're talking routes over about 3,000 nautical miles. That's your transatlantic, your Europe to Asia, your transpacific. And the metric that matters is aircraft utilization. Hours per day the airframe is actually flying, wheels up to wheels down. Airlines measure this obsessively because it's the closest thing to a revenue per asset number. A wide body that costs $200 million and flies 8 hours a day is earning half what the same airframe earns at 16 hours. Think of it like a taxi. A cab that sits at the depot for 12 hours a day is a terrible investment. Same principle, just with more zeros on the price tag.
So you're saying an airline's entire business model can be boiled down to keep the metal moving?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And the difference between reputation and reality on this metric is where the money lives.
Which I find fascinating because the public narrative around these aircraft is so different. The A330 is the boring one nobody talks about. The 787 is the shiny new thing. The A340 is the one people make jokes about. But you're saying the utilization data tells a different story than the reputation.
The A330 has this reputation as the unglamorous workhorse. The 777 and 787 get the headlines. The A330 is the one everyone writes off. But the utilization data doesn't always match the story people tell. And the reasons for those gaps are sometimes counterintuitive.
So which one actually wins?
The Boeing 777, and specifically the 777-300ER variant. This thing consistently averages 13 to 14 hours a day in the air. Some operators push past 15. Emirates runs 707-300ERs on Dubai to Newark. That's 6,800 nautical miles, with block times over 14 hours. And here's the thing. On some schedules, the same airframe does two ultra-long sectors in a single day with a short turn in between. You land, you swap crew, you refuel, you go again. It's relentless.
Wait, two ultra-long sectors in one day? How does that even work logistically? You're talking about a 14-hour flight, then a turn, then another one. That's more than 24 hours.
You're right to catch that. I should be more precise. When I say two sectors, I'm talking about schedules where the aircraft arrives from a long-haul route in the early morning, does a shorter long-haul turn during the day, say 6 or 7 hours, and then departs again in the evening on another ultra-long sector. It's not two 14-hour flights back-to-back, but the cumulative utilization across a rolling schedule can push well past 15 hours in a given 24-hour window. The point is, the aircraft barely stops.
That makes more sense. But still, 14 hours in the air, plus turn time, plus. When does the maintenance happen?
That's the discipline. Airlines that push utilization this high are running precision ground operations. They schedule maintenance in narrow overnight windows, they pre-position parts, they have crews ready the moment the aircraft blocks in. Emirates and Singapore Airlines are the textbook cases. They've built their entire long-haul networks around the 777-300ER's ability to just keep flying. It's not an accident. It's an operational philosophy. Every minute on the ground is a minute of revenue lost, and they've engineered their entire ground operation around minimizing that.
So it's not just the aircraft itself. It's the ecosystem around it.
Right. You can have the most capable aircraft in the world, but if your ground handling is slow, if your maintenance planning is reactive instead of predictive, if your crew scheduling doesn't align with aircraft availability, your utilization numbers will be mediocre no matter what you're flying. The 777-300ER is a great aircraft, but the utilization numbers you see from the top operators are as much about the airline as the airframe.
And what makes the 777-300ER specifically so good at this?
Three things. Range, up to 7,300 nautical miles, so it can do just about any city pair on Earth without a fuel stop. Passenger capacity, around 350 to 400 seats, which means it's profitable even on routes where you're burning a lot of fuel just getting there. And dispatch reliability. The 777 family has consistently posted dispatch reliability above 99%. Fewer technical delays means more hours in the air. Every cancellation or delay eats directly into your utilization average.
That 99% number? Is that actually verified, or is that Boeing marketing?
It's tracked independently. The 777 was the first aircraft to get ETOPS 180 certification right out of the gate, meaning it could fly routes up to 3 hours from a diversion airport on a single engine. That wasn't a marketing achievement. That required demonstrating to the FAA that the aircraft's systems, engines, and maintenance programs were reliable enough that a diversion due to a technical issue was extraordinarily unlikely. The dispatch reliability flows directly from that engineering standard.
So that's the champion. Where does the A30 land?
The A30-3300 averages about 11 to 12 hours daily. Respectable, but a clear step down. And the reason isn't that it's a worse aircraft, it's that airlines use it differently. The A30-3300 is the transatlantic specialist. Delta runs them on Atlanta to London, New York to Paris, routes that are long, but not ultra long. Those sectors don't demand 14-hour utilization to be profitable. The aircraft does it 7 or 8 hours across the ocean, sits at the gate for a few hours, does the return, and that's a perfectly good day.
So it's not that the A330 can't fly more. It's that the routes it serves don't require it.
Right. And there's a capacity factor, too. The A30-3300 seats fewer passengers than a 747-300ER. Airlines put it on routes with lower demand. Lower demand means fewer frequencies, which naturally caps utilization. You're not going to schedule 5 A330s a day on a route that only fills 2. It's a different business model. The A330 is optimized for a different segment of the market, and its utilization numbers reflect that segment, not a deficiency in the airframe.
So if you took an A330 and put it on a 777-style route network, could it push higher utilization?
In theory, yes. But you'd hit range limitations on the ultra-long routes. The A330-300's range tops out around 6,300 nautical miles. That's plenty for most transatlantic and Europe to Asia routes, but it can't do Dubai to Los Angeles or Singapore to New York. Those are the routes that generate the extreme utilization numbers. So it's not just the network. It's the fundamental capability envelope of the aircraft.
What about the 787?
The 787 averages around 12 to 13 hours daily. It's newer, it's more fuel efficient, its composite airframe lets it fly further on less fuel, but airlines are using that flexibility differently. They're opening new long, thin routes rather than maximizing hours on existing ones. Qantas running a 7879 on Perth to London. That's 9,000 nautical miles. It's an incredible route, but it flies once a day. The route length itself caps utilization because you can only fit one of those in a 24-hour window.
So the 787's superpower, opening routes that weren't viable before, is also the thing that keeps its utilization below the 777s.
That's exactly the trade-off. The 777 was optimized for a world where you fly between major hubs at high frequency. The 787 was optimized for a world where you connect cities that never had direct service before. Both are profitable strategies, but they produce different utilization numbers. And here's the thing, from an airline CFO's perspective, a 12-hour utilization on a route that you have a monopoly on might be more profitable than a 15-hour utilization on a route with three competitors. Utilization is a means to an end, not the end itself.
That's a crucial nuance. Higher utilization doesn't automatically mean higher profit.
It doesn't. If you're flying a 787 on Perth to London, you're the only non-stop option. You can charge a premium. The yield per passenger might be significantly higher than what Emirates gets on a competitive trunk route, even though Emirates is pushing higher utilization. The utilization number tells you how hard the asset is working. It doesn't tell you how much money it's making per hour.
And the A340?
The A340 is the cautionary tale here. In the 1990s, it was a utilization leader. Four engines, incredible range for its time. It opened routes that nothing else could fly. Virgin Atlantic used them on London to Hong Kong, South African Airways on Johannesburg to New York. But fuel prices rose, twin-engine ETOPS regulations relaxed, and suddenly, those four engines were a liability instead of an asset. Today, the A1340 averages 8 to 10 hours daily, and that number is falling.
Because they're being parked.
Retired or converted to freighters. Lufthansa pulled its last A340-600 from passenger service a few years ago. The fuel burn difference between an A340 and a 777 on the same route is brutal. We're talking 20 to 25% more fuel per seat. When oil is above $80 a barrel, that math doesn't work. And there's a maintenance dimension we'll come back to later.
I want to pause on that fuel burn number because it's staggering. 20 to 25% more fuel per seat. On a 14-hour flight with 300 passengers, what does that actually translate to in dollars?
Let's do quick math. A 777-300ER burns about 7 to 8 tons of fuel per hour on a long-haul cruise. Over 14 hours, that's roughly 100 tons. Jet fuel at current prices is somewhere around $700 to $800 per ton. So a single long-haul sector is $70,000 to $80,000 in fuel. A 25% penalty on that's $17,000 to $20,000 per flight. Multiply that across a daily schedule, across a fleet, across a year. You're talking millions of dollars per aircraft annually just in fuel delta.
And that's before we even get to the maintenance side.
Before maintenance, before crew costs, before everything else. The fuel penalty alone makes the A340 uncompetitive on any route where a 777 or A350 is an option. The only thing keeping them flying is that they're already paid for. The capital cost is sunk. But once the maintenance bills start climbing, and they do as airframes age, even that advantage evaporates.
So the scoreboard, 777-300ER at 13 to 14 hours, 787 at 12 to 13, A330 at 11 to 12, A330 at 8 to 10, and falling. Daniel's first question has a clear answer.
The 777-300ER is the daily miles champion, and it's not particularly close. But I should add, the 787 is catching up as its fleet matures and as airlines get more comfortable scheduling it aggressively. Give it another 5 years and those numbers might converge. The early 787s had teething issues, battery problems, delivery delays. That made airlines cautious. That caution is fading. We're already seeing some operators push 787 utilization into the 13-plus range.
Which brings us to Daniel's second question, the history one. Has any airline not flying Boeing or Airbus ever held major long-haul market share? And he specifically says besides Concorde.
Concorde is the obvious exception, a British-French joint venture, supersonic, operated by British Airways and Air France. It held a unique market position for nearly three decades. If you wanted to cross the Atlantic in 3.5 hours, you had exactly one option. But Daniel's asking about something bigger, an airline, not just an aircraft. And the answer is, mostly no, with one fascinating asterisk.
Aeroflot.
Aeroflot. In the Soviet era, Aeroflot was enormous. At its peak in the late 1980s, it carried over 100 million passengers annually. It was the largest airline in the world by many measures. And it flew long-haul routes using Soviet-built aircraft, the Ilyushin Il-86, introduced in 1980, and later the Il-96.
Moscow to Havana, Moscow to New York, Moscow to Delhi.
Right. These were genuine long-haul routes. The Il-96 had the range to reach the Americas. But here's the catch. Aeroflot's market share was almost entirely within the Eastern Bloc and a handful of international routes. In the Western long-haul market, the one Daniel is really asking about, Aeroflot was a bit player. They lacked the network, the frequency, and frankly, the aircraft reliability to compete with Pan Am, British Airways, or the emerging Asian carriers. If you were flying from New York to London in 1985, Aeroflot wasn't even on your radar.
How many IL-96s did they actually have?
The IL-96 fleet peaked at 25 aircraft in the early 2000s. 25. Compare that to the hundreds of 777s and A330s in service at the same time. The IL-96 was also not great. Poor fuel efficiency, reliability issues, and a cabin that didn't exactly compete with what Western manufacturers were offering. It was a Soviet aircraft built for a Soviet system, and when that system collapsed, so did any chance of it competing globally. The supply chain for parts disintegrated. The design bureau that built it lost funding. The whole ecosystem unraveled.
So the answer is no. But the asterisk is that Aeroflot was massive within its sphere.
And there are other niche cases worth mentioning. The Tupolev Tu-11 Ford, which Aeroflot flew on Moscow to Havana in the 1950s and 60s, a turboprop that held the speed record for propeller aircraft. It was actually derived from the Tu-95 bomber. Imagine boarding a commercial flight and realizing the airframe is a modified strategic bomber. The McDonnell Douglas DC-10 and MD-11, which were neither Boeing nor Airbus, but the airlines flying them. Northwest, KLM, Japan Airlines were major Boeing or Airbus customers in every other part of their fleet. McDonnell Douglas got absorbed by Boeing in 1997 anyway.
Lockheed's L-1011 TriStar, same story.
Same story. Technically not Boeing or Airbus, but the airlines operating them were firmly in the Western duopoly camp. There's never been a sustained, independent third player in long-haul aviation that captured meaningful global market share. The barriers are just too high. The capital costs, the maintenance infrastructure, the training pipelines, the regulatory certification. It's a two-firm game and has been for decades, and it's not for lack of trying. The Soviets tried. The Chinese are trying now with the Comac C-99, though that's a narrow body. Breaking into wide-body long-haul is an entirely different magnitude of difficulty.
The A380 tried to be the third way and didn't.
The A380 is its own cautionary tale. Airbus bet that the future of long-haul was hub-to-hub, giant aircraft moving passengers between a few mega airports. The market went the other direction. Point-to-point, long and thin routes, frequency over capacity. The A380 sold about 250 frames total. Emirates was the only airline that really made it work, and even they've shifted toward the A350 and 787. Many A380s are being retired early, some airframes with less than 10 years of service. That's a brutal write-down.
A $200 million aircraft parked in the desert after a decade.
Aviation isn't a gentle business. And the A380's problem wasn't that it was a bad aircraft. By most accounts, it was remarkably comfortable and quiet. Passengers loved it. But the economics only worked on a very specific set of routes with very specific demand profiles. When the market shifted, the aircraft couldn't adapt. Compare that to the 777, which has been adapted into multiple variants over 30 years. Flexibility matters as much as capability.
So that clears Daniel's second question. No third player has ever really threatened the duopoly. Which makes his third question, what's trending now? Even more interesting, because the answer is still Boeing and Airbus.
But the mix is shifting. If you look at the order books, the clear winners are the Boeing 787 and the Airbus A350. The 787 has over 1,500 orders. The A350 has over 1,000. These are the aircraft airlines are betting their long-haul futures on. And what's notable is that these are both clean-sheet designs from the last 15 years. They represent a generational leap in materials, engines, and systems. Airlines aren't just buying new aircraft. They're buying into a new technological platform.
And the A30 Neo?
Struggling. Only about 100 orders for the Neo variant. The A30-30 has a huge installed base and it's not going anywhere soon. There are hundreds of them flying and they'll be in service for another decade or two. But for new orders, airlines are voting with their wallets for the 787 and A350. The fuel efficiency difference is just too large to ignore. The A330 and Neo is a re-engined update of an existing airframe. The 787 and A350 were designed from scratch around new engine technology and composite structures. You can only stretch an old design so far.
The A350 competes directly with the 777-300ER, but with about 25% better fuel burn.
And that's the number that matters. On a 15-hour flight, 25% less fuel is millions of dollars per year per aircraft. Multiply that across a fleet of 50 or 100, and it's existential. The A350-1000 is basically the 777-300ER's replacement. And the 777X, the 777-9, Textus-7-9, is Boeing's answer, but it's delayed. Around 300 orders, and the program has been pushed back repeatedly. Certification issues, engine problems, the whole saga. Boeing is betting that a re-winged, re-engined 777 can hold the line against the A350, but the delays are costing them.
So the 787 and A350 are eating the market from both ends. The 787 takes the smaller long-haul routes. The A350 takes the bigger ones.
And the really interesting thing is what's happening at the extreme end. Qantas's Project Sunrise, non-stop Sydney to London, Sydney to New York. Those are 20-plus hour flights. Qantas ordered the A350 NOS-1000ULR specifically for those routes. That's the frontier. The aircraft that can do those routes profitably defines the next decade of long-haul aviation. We're talking about flights so long that the crew needs rest facilities. The galley needs to be redesigned for multiple meal services and the medical considerations. What happens if someone has a heart attack 6 hours from the nearest airport? Become novel challenges.
20 hours in a metal tube.
Carbon fiber tube, thank you.
My mistake. 20 hours in a carbon fiber tube.
The 787's composite airframe is actually part of why this works. It can be pressurized to a higher cabin altitude, equivalent around 6,000 feet instead of 8,000, and the humidity can be higher. Passengers arrive less dehydrated, less jet-lagged. It sounds like a comfort feature, but for airlines, it's an economic feature. It makes ultra-long-haul routes viable because people are actually willing to book them. If passengers swore off 20-hour flights after one try because they felt terrible, the business case collapses. The passenger experience and the aircraft economics are directly linked in a way they haven't been before.
So the trending answer, 787 and A350, with the A350-1000ULR and 777-8 fighting over the ultra-long-haul crown. The A330 is still flying but not winning orders. The A340 is done. The A380 is a museum piece.
The 777-300ER, still the utilization champion today, is gradually being replaced by the very aircraft that are trending. It's a passing of the torch, and it's happening right now. In 10 years, the utilization leaderboard might look completely different. The A350-1000 has the range and the efficiency to match or exceed the 777-300ER's numbers. The question is whether airlines will use it the same way, or whether they'll prioritize new route development over raw utilization, the way they have with the 787.
You mentioned earlier there was a maintenance dimension to the A340 story we'd come back to.
I did, and Hilbert's been waiting to talk about exactly that.
You want to know about the A340's maintenance costs? I can tell you about the A340's maintenance costs.
Hilbert worked ground ops for a small charter outfit in the late 90s.
1. A340-200. 1. Manchester to Orlando twice a week. The rest of the time, that aircraft was in the hangar. Everyone talks about the 777's utilization numbers like it's some kind of abstract metric. I lived the other side of it. I was the one filling out the paperwork while that thing sat on jacks.
What was actually breaking?
Everything. But the thing nobody mentions, and I mean nobody, I've read the trade press for 25 years and I've never seen this in print, is the four-engine mechanic premium. A twin-engine aircraft, you hire mechanics rated for those engines. Two types. An A340 with four CFM56s, that's four engines, and you need mechanics rated for all of them. Those mechanics cost more, they're harder to find. And you're paying them whether the aircraft is flying or sitting in the hangar, which in our case was most of the week. You can't just send them home when the aircraft isn't flying. They're on staff, they're on salary, and they need to be available.
The utilization number 8 to 10 hours a day, that's the average across the fleet. But for a small operator with a single airframe, the number could be much worse.
We were doing maybe 6 hours a day, averaged over the week. two 14-hour round trips, and then 5 days of maintenance. The 777 was already eating the A-30's lunch by 1999. We knew it. The owners knew it. They sold the aircraft in 2001 and got out of the business. I was there when the ferry flight left. Empty, just crew, headed to a new owner in the Middle East who presumably got a very good deal.
The four-engine premium. That's a real operational cost that doesn't show up in the utilization spreadsheets.
It shows up in the accountant's spreadsheet. And it's still a factor today. A lot of the A340s being retired early, it's not just the fuel burn, it's the maintenance infrastructure. You're paying for four engine capability across your entire operation for a handful of airframes. The math stops working long before the aircraft stops flying. I've seen airlines keep a single A340 flying and essentially subsidize it with the rest of the fleet because they needed the range on one specific route. As soon as a twin-engine alternative with the same range became available, that subsidy became indefensible.
That's the hidden cost I was talking about. The utilization numbers tell you how many hours the aircraft flies. They don't tell you what it costs to keep it flying during the hours it's on the ground.
For a small operator, that cost can be the difference between survival and not.
We had a good run. 2 summers. Then the 777 took over, and that was that. I'm not bitter about it. It was a good aircraft in its time. But its time passed, and the economics of four engines in a twin-engine world are unforgiving.
You still have the flight logs or something?
I have the operations manual. It's in a box in my garage. My wife keeps asking me to throw it out. I keep saying it's historical documentation.
The four-engine premium also compounds with another factor. The A340's four engines burn more fuel than two larger engines on the same route. So you're paying more for fuel and more for maintenance simultaneously. It's a pincer. Neither cost alone would necessarily kill the aircraft, but together, they make it impossible to justify once a viable twin-engine alternative exists.
That's why the A340 is disappearing faster than the raw utilization numbers suggest.
The utilization number is the headline. The maintenance premium is the fine print. Read the fine print. I watched a perfectly airworthy aircraft get sold off because the fine print ate the business model alive.
If you take one thing from all this, the 777-300ER is the daily miles champion, but the real story is that utilization isn't just about the aircraft. It's about the route network, the maintenance infrastructure, and the hidden costs that don't make it into the spec sheet. The number on the spreadsheet is the result of 100 decisions made months or years before that flight ever took off.
The future belongs to the aircraft that optimize across all of those dimensions. The 787 and the A350, not just the ones that fly the most hours on paper.
The open question is whether the 787 can eventually catch the 777 in daily utilization as its fleet matures. Its lower capacity might cap that ceiling. But the A350-1000 doesn't have that limitation. It could be the 777-3000ER successor in every metric, including hours per day. It has the range, the capacity, and the efficiency. The only thing it doesn't have yet is 30 years of operational data proving it can sustain those numbers.
The ultra-long-haul frontier? 20-plus-hour flights is where the next utilization records will probably be set. And it'll be an A-3050 or a 777X setting them. The question is whether those records will look like the 777-300ER's numbers, or something entirely different, because the route structures are so different from the hub-and-spoke model that produced the current champion.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing and for the ground-level perspective on four-engine economics. It's one thing to talk about utilization in the abstract. It's another to hear from someone who watched the spreadsheet become reality in a hangar in Manchester.
This has been my Weird Prompts. If you want more on how cargo shapes airline economics, which is another hidden factor in why airlines choose the aircraft they do, because belly cargo revenue can be the difference between a profitable route and a loss, making one, check out episode 115, The Hidden Economy in Your Plane's Belly. Find everything at myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.